Okay, it's June 27th, 2006, and we're here with Blake Ross. Blake, do you remember, or can you tell us when you first started using computers?
Yeah, I think I first started really doing serious work on computers when I was 8 years old.
And do you remember the first programming project that you worked on?
Yeah, it was really just my own personal website.
And when did you begin contributing to open source projects?
I stumbled across the Mozilla project in 2000. I was looking for the next version of Netscape and came across the open source project and just thought it was a really cool way to, you know, get involved with a really large project. Anyone can get involved. And so I started off by just following bugs and talking to other contributors and just started kind of fixing my own bugs at that point.
And tell us how you then began working for Mozilla.
Okay, so because Mozilla and Netscape worked very closely at that point, because Netscape was based on Mozilla, I knew the Netscape team very well, and I started kind of helping them fix their own bug list for the forthcoming release of Netscape, which was Netscape 6 at that point. And they offered me an internship for the summer. I think it was, I forget which summer it was. It was one of the summers during high school.
Like 2000, 2001?
Probably 2001, I think, because I got involved in 2000. So they just invited me out to Mountain View for an internship.
And then that ultimately led to a full-time job?
It was never really full-time, because I guess high school is my full-time job at that point, right. Which is not a very good job. But I did a couple internships with Netscape and then started contracting with them from home as well.
And when you worked with Mozilla, did you generally sort of work alone or within groups? And when you worked in groups, how was it determined who would do what? And how was the division of labor sort of determined?
So in the original Mozilla project, it was one very large group, basically divided into module owners. So you'd have a module owner for bookmarks and one for history and all that kind of stuff. And do you want me to talk about Firefox specifically
yeah,
at this point?
Sure.
Okay, so well, with Firefox, the model was a little bit different. It was a much smaller team working on a fork of the code base. It was small intentionally because we saw a lot of problems with that large group model. And so it was, you know, a handful of people. And so at that level, there's not really strict module owner division. It's basically just the Firefox team. And we all kind of had authority over the entire Firefox user interface.
Mm-hmm. So early on in the development of Firefox, I understand like the UI development was restricted to sort of a small team of people.
Yeah.
So why was that done, and how did or did the that access sort of change over time?
That was done because we found pretty quickly, as most other projects have, that UI designed by committee just does not work very well. So it was especially bad in the old Mozilla world because you had UI designed by committee, and there were two different committees. There was the Netscape committee with their own set of motivations, especially, you know, how do we make money off of the Netscape browser? And there was the Mozilla committee, which, you know, is not really interested in turning a profit. And so you had all these different factors and motivations weighing in on the process, and it was a real mess. So with Firefox, we said we're going to fork the code base, give control to a very small group of people who we think really have the end user's best interests at heart, and see what they do.
And so was it difficult sometimes to strike that balance between working on an open project and trying to keep end users in mind?
Yes. Everybody hated us for a long time. They still might. One of the major problems was that in an open source community run by programmers, everything is really based on numbers and logic and fact, right? That's just the world that developers live in. And so in the old world, if a bug had, for example, 700 votes, that was considered a lot and the bug should be fixed because the community wants it fixed and the community controls the project. And with Firefox, because we were targeting a much broader mainstream audience who wasn't going to voice their opinion to us in the bug tracking database, we had to go by basically intuition a lot. So we would often resolve bugs as won't fix, you know, essentially we're not going to fix this bug because we don't think it's a good fit for mom or dad, or implement this feature because we don't think it's a good fit for mom and dad. And the only statistics or the only basis for those kinds of decisions was our own kind of intuition, and that does not go over well in a community that's used to really just having strength in their own numbers.
Mm-hmm. How do you generally communicate with people, or how did you when you worked at Mozilla, with those who you worked with? What methods did you use to communicate?
So I think all of us run IRC like 24 hours a day. So that was a big means of communication, especially with Firefox early on. You know, we've got like most other open source projects, we have news groups, we have mailing lists, email is very big, but I think IRC was actually the most important form of communication. Especially because we had programmers from all different continents. So,
mm-hmm. Did ever like get confusing when sort of major decisions are made in IRC and if others kind of didn't catch that? Was that ever an issue?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly was, especially with the Mozilla project. Again, with Firefox, because the team was so small, you know, everyone's pretty much there all the time, and it wasn't a formal decision-making process. It was basically us just sitting around on IRC saying, you know, let's strip this feature, let's redesign this way, and that's kind of the benefit of a small team. I think that now that Mozilla is growing back to its older size again, and now that Firefox has gotten as big as it has, there's certainly tension around, you know, how did that decision get made, and why was it made, and who made it, and where is the documentation about that?
Mm-hmm. Would you say that strict ownership of specific areas of the code are enforced?
Yeah. Yeah, I think they're pretty well enforced. I mean, it's very hard to answer these kinds of questions because the project has gone through so many different cycles and so many different stages. You know, sometimes it's been very well maintained, other times it's like no one's been working on it and it just kind of goes back and forth. I think these days, now that Mozilla has grown as large as it has and really has the resources, there's definitely a much better division of labor and it's much better authority.
Have you ever clashed with another developer over a particular point of
code? Oh no, we all get along.
It's sort of an obvious, but like, how do you resolve that? Yeah.
So, in the old Mozilla world, and I hate to keep using that phrase, but I basically just mean the original Mozilla application, part of the problem was that those kinds of conflicts would usually be resolved in user interface. So two developers can agree on something, let's just add a preference, or let's just add a menu item and let the user decide whether or not to use that feature. And that's a pretty obviously poor way to design a user interface because it just gets cluttered with everyone's, you know, unmade decisions. So with Firefox, we knew that at the very least we wanted to make decisions one way or the other. They may be wrong, but we have to really keep user interface simple. We actually tended to get along pretty well, the five or six of us who were making decisions about the product in the first 6 months or so. Now that it's larger, you can go in the news groups, you can see very long UI debates happening about various features. Ultimately, it's just about reaching consensus and, you know, everyone has to compromise a little bit. But you know, there's always going to be disagreement in an open source project, and they're doing pretty well.
And have you noticed sort of, or do you think that there are sort of like natural tensions between those who work on the front end and those who work on the back end?
Yes, that's a great question. Yeah, there is because, well, let me think about how to answer that one.
Or I guess maybe another way of like how much communication and coordination is there among or between those two groups?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of problems. So one is that in general, this is obviously not true for everyone, but in general, the people working on the core layout engine and the backend in general are not as interested in making a huge mainstream product as the people working on the front end, right? Because the people working on the front end are all about creating things that face the user every day, and they're very excited about interacting with regular users. Whereas people working on the back end tend to be more interested in enforcing web standards and creating solid, very performant code, which is obviously critical to a product. But there's often clashes as far as, you know, are we spending too much of our time on marketing and on all of this stuff that is not important to the core technology? I think the flip side of that is that a lot of the back-end engineers understand that because of the work of the front-end engineers and all the marketing that's going on, that back-end work is being more widely distributed among a much wider audience, right? So do you want to create a layout engine that's being used by 1 million people or being used by 60 million people? And so I think at the end of the day, that's kind of how we resolve that tension.
Okay. To what extent has Mozilla relied on the work of volunteers? And like maybe how has that or has it changed over time?
It's always relied on volunteers. I mean, I started as a volunteer. I think most of the people working on the project in any kind of official capacity began as volunteers. I guess it's changed over time in the sense that now Mozilla finally has the resources to be its own independent entity, and so it can really hire a lot of these volunteers and actually pay them, which is obviously a great thing for the community. But we still have, you know, hundreds of thousands of volunteers, so it's a very strong community.
Why did you sort of, what led you to volunteer?
What led me to volunteer? At that point, I had been working on websites and programs that were used by like four people, including me. And so this was a chance to work on something that even at that point was being used by over 2 million people. And that was really cool.
Did you at the time think it might lead to, you know, like a full-time job or something? Or were you just...
No, I wasn't thinking about it. When you're, when you're 14, you're not thinking, wow, this could be a career. You're thinking, this is a cool, you know, after school kind of thing. So,
do you think that's sort of most people's motivation, or other reasons you think why people volunteer?
No, I think that that is actually the reason why most people contribute, just because they use the product themselves, they want to see it succeed. Some people want to see open source in general succeed, but I think very few people are part of this project just because of their own career aspirations.
So why do you think that Firefox has been able to attract such a large number of users?
I think number one, it's because we decided very early on that that was going to be our audience. So just that decision alone really impacted the way that we designed the product. And we made a number of very deliberate decisions that we were going to design something very simple, very easy to use, even though it wasn't quite the right kind of product for the community we had at that point. I think the second reason is because of efforts like Spread Firefox and just the fact that we really did the legwork from the very beginning of the project to go out there and really try to attract mainstream users, which was kind of rare for an open source project to do that. So I think it's just because we were the right product at the right time. Internet Explorer had been abandoned, and we went out there and just converted people one by one.
You were pretty instrumental in Spread Firefox in the beginning,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Was there sort of a debate, like, how are we going to split this work? Should we hire full-time, like, marketing people? And, like, basically just how did Spread Firefox come about? And what was, like, the long-term vision of what
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, you say I was instrumental. I was instrumental in putting together the site and helping put together some of the campaigns. But obviously, it's the volunteers at Spread Firefox who are really the ones making all these downloads happen. And we've got about 200,000 volunteers today. And our general strategy is that from time to time, we do very organized campaigns, like the New York Times ad campaign or the Firefox Flicks campaign that you're going to see or that you can see right now. And the attempt there, obviously, is to kind of find strength in numbers. And then the other kind of campaigns that we try to run are very individualized campaigns. So can we find four people in Texas with a similar skill set that are nearby each other and have them go out and spread the word in their own way? So just how can we leverage the unique talents and resources of each individual contributor?
I know you're no longer for Mozilla right now, but... How would you list Mozilla's priorities at the time that you were there?
I think the organization's priorities really haven't changed much since the beginning, since they were first kind of born inside of Netscape, and that is to foster innovation and choice on the web, really to provide an alternative to the proprietary stuff that Microsoft puts out. I think that the priorities of the Firefox project went a little bit beyond that, and we really wanted to not only foster choice and innovation, but really try to attract a very large mainstream audience. So not just kind of throw the product out there and let it be there, but really actively go after that audience. And so I think that that was my personal priority, at least, and the priority of a lot of people on the team.
So if I could just go back for 1 second.
Sure.
Back to marketing. Well, no, I guess we probably covered that. Oh, no, sorry. Have you contributed to any other open source projects?
No, thankfully.
And how about any sort of more commercial software projects?
No, I mean, Mozilla and Firefox are really the only large software projects I've worked on. I worked on a software project at Stanford, a security project, but it's pretty much been Mozilla full-time for a while, except for this new venture that I'm working on right now.
Is that also
that has to be more commercial, just because we don't have the benefit of a $2 million grant from AOL that Mozilla had, or donations. So yeah, that'll be a little bit more traditional. It'll probably be VC backed, but we do hope to open source that as well.
Can you discuss what it is you're working on?
No.
Right now. Okay.
Well, have you found the process at all different, though?
Oh, yeah. It's totally different. It's totally different. I mean, people think, you already helped with Firefox, so another startup should be just going through the same old steps again. And it's entirely different. Mm-hmm. You have to put together a pitch. You have to go out. You have to raise money. You have to make money, obviously, which obviously that Firefox is doing now, but that wasn't one of the original intents behind it. So it's a very different process.
And have you found that you've had to actually structure the way you're working at all differently, or because you sort of had that, a lot of what you've sort of talked about is that, or the feeling I've gotten is that with Firefox, there was pretty strong leadership in the beginning.
Yeah.
And it was a small team, and it sort of was leadership in the sense that everybody was sharing it. It wasn't,
right.
It didn't
right.
need a lot of direction. But
right.
are you finding that doing your own thing now that
right.
you actually have to
Yeah,
fill
it's
these
it's
goals?
Much more challenging.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that bothers me actually is when I see the press say that, the Firefox team is 5 or 6 people, because you have to understand that the Firefox team is built on top of the Mozilla team, which is many, 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 many people. And when you go off on your own and try to do your own project, and on this project I have only one other partner, you really start to realize just how valuable all those other contributions really are, and all that support that you had working on Mozilla. There's just two of us right now. So,
is it difficult generally, do you think, for kind of a commercial project to go open source?
I think it is, because, well, there's two reasons. Number one is that a lot of investors are kind of afraid of the concept of open source. They don't really quite get it yet. And number two is that a community is going to be much more distrustful of a project that seems to have commercial motivations behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of saw a little bit of that when Mozilla announced that it was turning a large profit from Firefox. But people fortunately understand that all that goes right back into the project.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that some of the things that might make companies hesitate might change now that Firefox is so visible and it's a success example of success? Or I guess to put it another way, like, what do you think Firefox might do for the open source community as a whole, or for software as a whole?
I hope that it demonstrates that an open source project can actually do marketing and can actually reach the mainstream. I think that Firefox is probably the first real open source product that might actually be on mom's desktop, for example. And unfortunately, I don't know how it's going to impact other open source projects, because it seems to me that the problem with many open source projects hasn't been a fear of marketing. It's actually been a kind of a disgust for marketing and a disgust for mainstream users. So if you look at other open source cultures, you actually see developers ridiculing mainstream people because they're, you know, they're not tech geeks and they just don't understand that culture. And so I think it's going to really require a cultural shift in other open source projects for them to tackle the mainstream like we have.
I mean, yeah, even coming back to, you know, there's been a lot of tension, or it seems part of the community is thinks that something fundamentally changed with Mozilla creating a corporation.
Yeah.
You know, and there were people like Chase Phillips who sort of became opaque. And
did you talk to him?
Not yet. Yeah, but, you know, that, you know, he didn't really understand where things were going.
Right.
I mean, what are your feelings on that sort of, you know, that tension there that people see between nonprofit and a corporation and money coming in? And, you know, do you think that Mozilla sort of changed in that process for good or bad? Or
I think that they changed in the process. I don't think they changed in terms of their structure. It's still wrapped, it's still owned by a nonprofit organization, so all the money coming in is still going right back into the project. And that's, you know, people are always going to have their own conspiracy theories, but that's just fact. It's wrapped in a nonprofit organization. Obviously, the company has changed now that it has tens of millions of dollars and is not relying on donations anymore. In some ways, it's changed for the better in that it now has more resources and a better division of labor, like I said earlier. And I think in some ways it's changed for the worse in the sense that now you have a lot of design by committee again, which was one of the reasons why we split off Firefox in the first place. So, I mean, to be honest, one of the reasons that I'm not really actively involved in Firefox anymore is because it's gotten so large, it's gotten more mature, but it's also gotten really much slower. It can't really innovate as fast and as quickly as it used to.
Do you consider open source software projects a public service?
No, I mean, I really just consider open source another kind of development model. I think it has a lot of strengths and a lot of weaknesses, which we've talked about. I'm not very religious about open source like some people are. I think that it has its place, but I don't think that it's, you know.
Well, how would you define, just this is like a really broad question, but yeah. How would you define a successful open source project? What sort of practices and elements do you think are absolutely necessary for a project to succeed?
I think that the most important factor is that the developers really understand and be in constant communication with their users. So I'm not saying that the user has to be mom or dad or this kind of mainstream audience that we're targeting. It's fine for example, Apache to be targeting developers. But whoever the audience is, you really have to understand their needs. And in some open source projects that I've seen, the developers tend to kind of shut themselves away in their room or in their office or whatever and just kind of code 24 hours a day. And it's impossible to design a product for someone if you don't empathize with them.
So essentially you would say also that consequently, like, a successful project is one that people use, that you know.
Yeah, I would say a successful project is one that people use. Absolutely. It doesn't have to be at the scope of Firefox, but whatever audience you're targeting, a large percentage of them should be using it if you're to be successful, I think.
So, another broad question.
Sure.
What do you think the future of open source is?
I think that open source is on the way to becoming a lot more professional. Obviously, it has its roots in a group of hackers kind of separating off from the mainstream, doing their own thing. And I think that because of Firefox, some companies are going to look at this model and say, wow, this really works. That could be good for open source, but it could also be bad because it might lead companies to just use open source as kind of a marketing tactic. So I think that Microsoft kind of does that in a way with their whole shared source initiative. They're trying to say, look, we're open. We have the whole community spirit as well. But it doesn't smell like much more than just a marketing pitch. So I think that open source will get more organized, more professional, You're going to see more projects that are backed by real companies and not just by a group of hackers. And again, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
And how much of your interest is there in creating sort of an alternative business model through open source?
How much interest among...
I mean, like, just you personally, you know? I mean, is that something you think about consciously, or... Is it more from a? Are you coming at more from, you know, the technical?
Yeah, I don't really look at the open source model in terms of a business. I look at it really just in terms of a way to interact with a great community, and especially if you're if you're starting a company, it's a great way to find new talent, right? Because you don't have to have just a 2-hour job interview with a whiteboard and some silly questions. You actually get to see how the candidate would behave and would perform. If they were actually part of your team. So I think that's why Mozilla has been able to attract some great talent.
Do you see examples of open source techniques being used in other areas of production today? Or do you think like the software movement's kind of unto itself?
Well, I think we adapted it to marketing pretty nicely in terms of Spread Firefox. I mean, that really was the intent. We looked at other open source projects and realized that they all kind of had this community of people who are not developers, not really testers either, but they still liked the product enough to sit around on message boards and talk about it all day. And it seemed like kind of a crime to us to waste, you know, the talents of hundreds of thousands of people who like your product and have a lot of free time. So Spread Firefox is really about trying to extend the idea of open source to include everybody. You know, you maybe you're a lawyer, maybe you're a teacher, maybe you're a florist. Whoever you are, you know some people, you have some set of skills and talents, and there's got to be a way to put that to good use and involve you in the project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, well, thanks for talking
with us. Okay, thank you. Great.